5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Clapp, Director of Content for WorkinSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. When I was younger, I had this idea about being discovered. You know, you read these clickbait stories of famous people being discovered just walking around town. Ashton Kutcher was ambling through a mall in Iowa when a talent scout discovered him. Jennifer Lawrence was walking with her family in Union Square while vacationing in New York, and a talent scout discovered her. When I was young, I thought of these moments a lot. Like my time was coming, I'd be discovered soon. Truth is, I was kind of chubby, kind of short, had a lot of freckles and braces. I mean, back then I was. Now I'm tall and I'm strapping. I mean, back then I was chubby. Now it's totally different. Point is, I was consumed with this idea of something great happening to me just by being somewhere. This lottery ticket of life was going to be bestowed upon me as I walked through Chess King at the Leominster Mall, picking out some horrendous outfit, or at least looking significantly intrigued, as if I was playing a role to some camera that didn't really exist. You daydream and you think someone may be watching right now. Time for Blue Steel. You're laughing. I hope you're laughing at least a little bit. I mean, I'm laughing at myself. But you're laughing because you probably did or still do the same thing. I mean, we all do. We all imagine these things happening to us by circumstance. But here's the problem. People do this with their careers, too. I'll be discovered after college by someone great doing something I deserve to do, and they'll pay me lots. In the early months of this podcast, I had on sports recruiter Dan Rossetti. Dan is incredible. He is the president of Prodigy Sports Recruiting and one of the true greats in this industry, along with his co-workers Mark Gress and Scott Carmichael. Their organization is fantastic. But here's what happened when I released that episode. I was flooded, and I imagine Dan was too, with requests of people who wanted Dan to do the work for them. It didn't matter what the job was or what their skills were, they just wanted Dan to discover them and then discover a job for them. Sorry, people, that's not how the world works. I looked at it before, when I was younger, about being discovered and taking this passive attitude like something was going to happen to me. You are much better off and will be much more successful if you go out and proactively figure out how to get where you want to get. You need a plan. You need a skill set. You need to build your brand. You need experience. Then someone like Dan can take you to another level. He can't make you desirable to employers. That's on you. Only you can do that. So if you're the equivalent of chubby with freckles right now, you need to change that story. Here's the other thing that happened during that interview. Dan dropped some incredible knowledge and insight about what makes people successful in their sports careers, and he would know better than anyone. I think a lot of people missed a lot of the points Dan was making because they got this idea of being discovered in their eyes instead. Forget discovery right now. Let's go back into learning mode. Here's Dan Rossetti, president of Prodigy Sports and one of the most insightful people in the industry. Hi, Dan. How are you doing today?
Hey, Brian. How are you today?
It's great. I'm doing really well. It's good to have you on the show. You have this great expertise into sports recruiting, which is something that, you know, I don't have a ton of experience in. I've hired a lot of people, but I've never been on the recruiting side where I've been tasked by an employer to say, here, help us fill this role. So I think you have this great expertise our audience will really lean into and appreciate. You've worked in this business for a long time. You've helped place staff inside many high-profile sports organizations, anything from the New York Jets to MMA to Major League Baseball. You're on the front line. You know what's happening out there. In your experience, what do you kind of see as the primary skills or attributes that lead someone to a successful career in sports? Do you see any pattern or theme that kind of emerges?
No, that's a great question. And you know, I tell students and candidates that are interested in roles that I wish there was a magic pill that you could take and next day you wake up and you're working in the sports and entertainment industry,
right?
Unless your last name, Brian, happens to be like Jones and you live in Dallas, or Kraft and you live in New England. The three attributes that I always come back to are determination, resilience, and flexibility. Look, there. I mean, there's no way to cut it, but you have to want it. I mean, you know, there are thousands upon thousands of candidates that are applying for these jobs that you are going after, and I don't think that the next generation of students or, you know, entrants into the sports entertainment space quite understand that mm-hmm. not only are you competing with people in your college, you're competing against people, you know, in your sports major, sports management major, but you're competing with people who maybe got business degrees or got public relations degrees. You're competing against people in your state. You're competing against people in the country. You're competing against people internationally for these roles. So you have to really want it. You know, I go and I speak to a number of these classes, and at the end of the presentation, I always give my business card to those who want it and tell them, please follow up with me if you have any questions or if I can be of any help in any way. In a class of 30 or 40, Brian, maybe, it never fails, maybe 10 ask for business cards.
That's
and
crazy.
Of those 10, maybe 3 or 4 actually follow up with me. And it blows my mind.
Yeah.
Absolutely blows my mind.
You're opening the door and they're not walking through it. And that's tough.
Absolutely. And I don't have a hard number to, or analytics or data to go with this, but you know, the ones who do follow up with me usually end up in the industry in some form or fashion because they're determined to find a way in. You know, I mentioned resilience. You have to be able to get knocked down, you know, whether it's a networking ask, whether it's, you know, going through an interview process, whether it's in a job. You have to be able to pick yourself up again. And that's a lesson. That's more of a life lesson that I think is I don't want to say lacking in some of the students that I speak with or some of the people that I speak with, but they instantly think they graduate with a degree in sports management that, oh, there's the job for me.
Right.
No, I mean, you have to be able to understand that you're going to get no sometimes, and not necessarily, that's not always a bad thing, but you have to be able to bounce back, and it kind of ties in with the determination and then flexibility. From what I understand of your career, you've moved around a lot. I've moved around a lot.
Yep.
You know, you have to be able to veer off the imagined path that you have to get your foot in the door. And that can be anything from, you know, is the role or the opportunity you have, is it in the desired field? You may have a degree, you know, desire to be in community relations, but the first opportunity is in operations. Will you take it?
Yeah.
You know, it may be in a different sport. I've always wanted to work in football. Well, this is in baseball. Are you willing to take it just to get in? Is it a different location? The more open you are, absolutely, it makes, and the more flexible you are, it makes the transition into the industry that much easier.
It's so true. I've had so many people message me or email me or even ask a question in other formats and say, hey, I live in New Jersey and I want to get a job in New Jersey. So what should I do? And the first thing I say is look outside of New Jersey and be open to that, because you have to be willing to take on the opportunity where it is. It's not always going to come to you, and you have to be willing to step out there and say, this opportunity is worth it to me. It doesn't matter that it's not my back door. I'm going to go on this adventure and find this job and go do it, because that's the way you're going to build your career. And eventually you'll work your way back to New Jersey or wherever it is you want to be if you really want that. But you have to take that first step in a different direction sometimes.
As well, you as a candidate, you may go through the process and realize ultimately, because also with flexibility, I mean, we're also talking about, you know, are you prepared for long days, nights, homestands, giving up weekends, holidays, you know, getting paid probably less than your friends who may be graduating from college and going to work for a pharmaceutical sales company or in, the financial industry, any of those things. You may quickly find out that, you know what, sports isn't really what I, you know, really where I wanted to be. And that's okay.
Yeah.
But you have to go and find it out.
So true. So I've interviewed a lot of sports executives for this podcast, and, you know, I always ask, I'm like, what are you looking for when you hire? How do you find people? What is your kind of process for getting there? And a lot of them will say things like, well, I'm drawn to soft skills like work ethic and passion. And I don't doubt that they are, but it's not like someone can put that on their resume. I work really hard, or I really love the sports industry, and they're going to get noticed out of that stack of 1,000 applicants. I know it varies from job to job, but aren't skills and experience still the most important attribute a candidate can have to get noticed?
You know, at the end of the day, you can either perform the job or you cannot.
Right.
Even if you get hired through passion, work ethic, soft skills, it's going to be determined pretty soon whether you keep the job or not. I like to define soft skills as just, sometimes the difference between getting a meeting or getting an interview or landing a job offer. For college students, I tell them soft skills are the things that are the difference between you getting an A in a class or you getting a B in the class.
Right.
Are you willing to kind of put the extra effort in? So those are things that are noticed in person, but on your resume, no, you're absolutely right. You can't just put, I'm a hard worker. Well, you know, we're all hard workers.
Exactly.
I listen to Mike Golic in the morning, and you know, one of the best things I've always heard is, him say is when people say, well, this person works harder than everybody else. No, he doesn't.
Right.
Or no, they don't.
Right.
You know, how do you know that? We all work really hard. So you're right. You can't go off of that. Now, with that being said, soft skills are something that are a great separator from the rest of the field,
mm-hmm.
because there's a lot of candidates at the entry level positions, or even higher, you can have the same tangible skills or the actual logistical skills that a team or an organization may be looking for, but soft skills are the things that are going to enhance your chance of getting to the next step, because it's going to separate you out. Because, I did my own quasi-research study, about a year and a half ago, and I reached out to over 250 sports and entertainment executives asking them, the question you just did, which of these three or four skills, soft skills, are the most important to your organization or, the ones that you look for in people? And the four that I got that were at the top were communication, problem solving, critical thinking, teamwork, and adaptability.
Okay.
So if you hear those things, how do you build your profile as a candidate that involves those things? And it can be others too, within the soft skill, kind of vertical. But, this is coming from 250 executives.
Yeah.
They're telling you, you need to, on top of your work, if you have these skills, you're going to go far, and we're going to probably take a hard look at you.
Yeah.
So then it's just a matter of how you incorporate those into your presentation.
Yep.
When you're talking to people.
Yeah, it's almost like the soft skills are what helps you once you get into the room. Like, you have to have the skills and the experience to get noticed and get in the room for the interview. But then once you're in that, you're a finalist or you're down to the top 10 or your top 5 or whatever, it's those soft skills are going to come through during the interview process when you're face-to-face with somebody and you're looking across the table at them and you're able to show, like, you're excited, you've got passion, you've got work ethic, you've got all those attributes. That's what's going to stand out, is once you reach the interview phase. But it's still so important for people to get the skills to do the job.
You're right. I mean, someone's not going to get, I've never seen in my, 15 years of doing this in sports entertainment, someone hired just off the resume.
Right.
I mean, that just gets you the interview.
Yep.
From there, you've got to present yourself. So no, you're spot on.
So for you personally in the recruiting world, you're putting your name behind candidates. You're standing out and saying, I think this person would be a good match, or that these five people, or whatever your process is. What is it for you that gives you that confidence? Because I think when I was in charge of hiring, when I worked at Fox Sports Northwest, I always felt like when I went to my boss and said, these are my top three candidates, I was almost putting myself in a very vulnerable position. They almost represented me. So I feel like you must feel that way all the time, that you are bringing candidates to an organization and they represent you. So how are you able to feel confident that they're going to be the right match? What are you looking for?
And it's funny you mention that. I always tell people who ask me about my job and what I like about my job, and then then we get to the point of the things that I wish I could change about my job, and we deal in the most intangible commodity that's out there, and that's human capital.
Yeah.
And when we present and we place a candidate at an organization, they are hiring Dan Rossetti and Prodigy Sports. They're not, while the candidate is there, if that candidate should happen to get fired in the first week, happen to leave in the first 2 weeks, 3 months that they're on the job, they don't look at and get upset with that candidate.
Right.
They look at Dan Rossetti and say, you let us down. Well,
yep.
I got you to that, I got you to that point. Now, the candidate's the one that's there. So, it always comes down to results and reputation. Brian, numbers don't lie. If you're in sales and if you can consistently show that, you have produced in the situations that you're in, I'm going to feel comfortable with you. I always use the example with salespeople, and this could be true for any discipline, but mainly with salespeople. Everybody in a sales interview has that one sales story. They have that one story that absolutely is the one that they hang their hat on of, and they've told it 1,000 times of, this was my best engagement, or this was my best deal that I ever closed.
Mm-hmm.
Good salespeople have that one, and it can be very good. Great salespeople have a second, they have a third, they have a fourth, they have a fifth. They can keep going on. So they're always going to be able to represent you well. But, your reputation is so big within our industry. And other industries may tell you the same thing, but I don't necessarily believe it as much as ours, that, it's such a small degree of separation that even if you get let go from a job, but you work real hard, you're a good person, you're a good teammate, you do the right things, you're probably going to get another chance.
Yeah.
If you're let go from an organization and you were kind of a jerk, you're probably not going to get another chance. Because the first thing that, teams and companies look for is who in their referral network can give a name, who can give a name of somebody. And if your name isn't the one that's popped up, then you need to take a look of, gosh, what have I maybe done? The reputation is just, it's one of those things that you can control. You can't control necessarily some of the other results that end up, but reputation you can, and integrity and those things. So if a person and a candidate that I'm speaking with, it just shows some of that, then I feel more comfortable. But still, at the end of the day, they can tell me yes 99 times. That last time, they may come back and tell me no, and I'm going to be like, wait, you told me yes 99 times.
Right.
So you try and control the variables as much as you can.
So we have a private Facebook group for fans of the podcast. And before I jump in an interview, I always ask that group, do you have any questions you want me to ask? I want to know what you guys want me to figure out here. And the best question we got submitted this time around was from Kayla Jackson, who's a recent graduate of Northwestern's Medill School of Journalism. And she says, it appears, because she checked out your site, it appears Prodigy focuses on mid to executive level management positions. How are you able to recognize when somebody's ready to make the jump from a more entry-level position to a management-type position? Is there something you can identify as being this person's primed and ready to make that jump?
That's a great question. And I don't think there's a specific answer. I think it depends on the skill set, and I think it depends on the background of the individual. If they're at Northwestern, and I think you mentioned journalism, Kayla,
yeah,
in journalism.
Yeah, the Medill School of Journalism, which is really good, better than I did.
Yeah, no, and for them and for those students and for those professionals, I think it's when you go beyond what's expected and you bring in new ideas, new content, new things that ultimately go to driving revenue. Whether entry level or major, or kind of mid level to management, really what separates somebody is, are you bringing new value to our company?
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing something? Are you providing work, are you providing something to our organization that puts us in a better place than we were 2 months ago?
Yep.
And the ones that move up have done that, and they have shown that. And they've shown that they can drive the business, not necessarily just strictly numbers, but they can drive the business, whether it's a new venture, whether it's a new partnership, whether it's a new division, a new award. I mean, they've done something that shines a light on the organization that's taken them to the next level. That's when you start noticing the people who are ready to take the next step.
It's so true. And I found in my career from a personal standpoint that when I was first getting started, it felt like my job was so tactical. I had things to do from day to day, execute and deliver on. And then as I got next into that next phase of more management style, I had to be that person thinking 2 months ahead, 3 months ahead, 4 months ahead, and being more proactive and seeing problems before they happened. And you carry over from day to day rather than just have a 9 to 5 5, and nobody in sports works 9 to 5, but for example, a 9 to 5 like clock out kind of experience, and you go from being tactical to more strategic. So that's almost like a transition phase too that I look back on and say, yeah, that was my biggest difference. When I was the news director at Fox Sports Northwest, I had the hardest time finding qualified technical directors. That was a position that I had the hardest time filling. When people talk to me about working in sports broadcasting, I'd say, learn how to be a technical director, because there aren't enough out there. In your perspective, what do you find as the type of sports job that has possibly higher demand than talented people to fill it? Is there a certain role that it might be harder for you to fill than others that more people should look into?
You know, I mean, so there's two things that I would say, and you know, one, and you know, we'll probably touch base on it a little bit later, but if you can understand numbers from a data and analytics standpoint, or you're very good from a you know, kind of a digital social media perspective of even being on the more cutting of an edge, you're going to have a place, because you can see that demand is there, but we're in an industry that is a little more old school, and there's a lot of executives that still don't quite grasp it. They just, you know, they're still trying to learn. They're still gathering information. So you can help them. So, I mean, I think that is, you know, a niche in a sector that you could obviously position yourself well. The other one that, you know, and I don't know if it's just because they come up in our daily life here at Prodigy Sports. We're not, as an industry, I feel like we could do a better job of growing the sponsorship sales professionals.
Right.
You know, there's seems to be a number of jobs that are always available, and it's just, we just don't have, as an industry, we haven't built up the right makeup or profile of someone to take the next step. You know, in ticket sales, it was very easy to, you know, sometimes find that person who could go from ticket sales to group sales to, you know, premium sales to suite sales. Like, yeah. I mean, there was a nice proven path. In sponsorships, we're still kind of feeling it out of, I think this person's got the right makeup for it,
right,
or this person doesn't. And as revenue and the demands on these individuals to drive revenue tied to sponsorship have continued to go up, the leash has become much, much shorter. And, you know, that you've got 12 to 18 months to kind of prove yourself. And if it's not working, we can, you know, we're going to go find somebody else. Well, gosh, I mean, it's not a transactional sale, as you know.
Right,
I mean,
right.
It takes time to get someone to trust handing over six figures plus to you and your organization. So, you know, it's a skill set that, I mean, if you can somehow grasp and really learn the benefits of a proposition to a brand or to a organization of why they should be partnering together, you're going to have an opportunity in our business. You're going to have a spot.
That is great advice. When I first entered the sports industry, it was back in 1996, not to tell my age, but social media wasn't a thing. Analytics wasn't a thing. Esports wasn't a thing. Like, these things did not exist. These are huge sectors in the sports marketplace now. In your thoughts, do all these sectors have staying power, or are they more of a passing fad? Do you see like growth areas, and how do you see things playing out in the future?
yes, and yes.
Yeah.
You know, is the easy way to put it. So, I mean, you know, times are changing, and as I alluded to in the last question, sports always tends to be a little bit behind,
right,
as it relates to things like social media, data, and analytics. You know, we're getting there, but we need to continue the momentum that we're building, and it's not going away. Creating content isn't going away on different social media channels. Finding out how you're going to attract, you know, millennials and as well as is it the Gen Ys or the, you know, the next generation that's coming up as well. What are those things? And you need to be already preparing yourself. You know, I heard it was a presentation, or it was kind of a panel a couple of years ago at National Sports Forum, and Ken Hudgens at the time was the running Feld Motorsports, was up there, and they were talking about marketing to millennials. And he was very simple, and this was in 2015, and he was very quick to say, if we're just deciding a millennial strategy now, we're way behind.
Yeah.
You know, we need to already be thinking about the next generation and figuring that out. So, you know, I don't see that sector, you know, being, you know, or that space going away anytime soon. Now it's just a matter of watching and seeing what's the latest trends and what are the, you know, I think I read something the other day that said Snapchat is the most popular, you know, right now.
Yep.
You know, it's not, you know, it's not Instagram, it's not Twitter, it's not Facebook, it's Snapchat, where millennials and the next generation are getting, you know, kind of gaining their content or kind of or views online. You know, as for esports, that's interesting. So, you know, here at Prodigy, you know, sports, we, you know, we have a practice that's dedicated to this space, and I mean, we have no reason to believe that it's going away. The numbers of viewers, the, you know, the money that's being poured in, it doesn't lie. You know, the space just needs to make sure that they handle the transition to a legitimate sport in the rest of the eyes of the industry. There's still, you know, a number of naysayers when I go to some conferences of people that have been longtime executives within the industry that just, they're not sure. They don't buy into it yet because they've seen the ebbs and flows. Yeah, they've seen the ebbs and flows of sports like this. So, I mean, but you're also seeing a lot of top former executives within the traditional sports space making the move over to that industry because they need that help. You know, they're at the cutting edge of certain aspects of business, but they're behind when it comes to just traditional, how do we partner with a potential sponsor? How do we get our, you know, how do we cut a viewership deal, or how do we cut a deal with a Twitch or a, you know what I mean, to legitimize and get it on TV. I mean, like, they don't see that piece of it. So it's a nice kind of combination. And I'll be very interested to see, obviously, with Overwatch starting, you know, last night, and with NBA 2K right around the corner, you know, we're also, you know, we just started a search working with, you know, a battle royale, you know, league called H1Z1 that is, you know, is going to be, I mean, these are the next sports that are coming. I think it's just a matter of, you know, a matter of just them keeping their brand identity, because it's a different clientele that keeps the, you know, their identity the way they want it, the brand the way they want it, but trading off, you know, there's a way to make money on this too, and I liken it to Brian. You know, I think if, you know, we're, like you mentioned, we're roughly around the same age. If you would have asked the skaters, the Tony Hawks in the mid 80s and the late 90s, you know, late 80s and early 90s, and the Travis Pastranas or the Ken Blocks of the world, you know, they would have laughed at the fact that they could have monetized themselves to the degree that they are today.
Yeah.
I think the same could be said for esports of, you know what, if they find the right model, they're going to make a lot of money. You know, these people are going to make a lot of money.
It's funny, having spent most of my career in a sports newsroom where debates just happen day after day after day after day about the most meaningless things in sports. But nonetheless, we used to argue whether golf and NASCAR were actually sports. You know, like, that would be a joke. You'd like needle people that were big golf fans or NASCAR fans and say, yeah, it's not even a sport. Like, they're sitting in a, and it, obviously they are, but that was just the debate you'd have. And now we're in a world where we're watching video games. People play video games on TV, and it's a growing medium. It's huge. It's, people are really taking to this. So it's funny the way things change so rapidly, and those people that are willing to stay on the leading edge rather than kind of falling behind are going to be the ones that benefit from it, don't you think?
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit more about your process in recruiting. You get a placement order from an employer. How do you get that from where it starts to final completion? What's your kind of process through this?
Yeah, no, you know, that's a great question. So, you know, our traditional model is, we are a retained executive search firm. So we are hired by the end clients when they have a specific need or a specific role that they are having a hard time filling, or they just don't have the time to dedicate to filling it. That's where we step in. So we represent the client. I think there's sometimes confusion when you talk to firms like ours of, you know, if you're a candidate of, well, geez, let me get you my resume. Are you going to send it to a number of different companies? No,
right.
That's not our model. So, you know, we obviously have a two-pronged approach of just a general network that we've built up over time of clients that we've worked with, people that we know in the industry that will call us up when they have the, you know, a need or a position that's open, as well as just traditional business development, you know, staying at the cutting edge. Esports was a perfect example of, we saw a need for a firm that could, you know, could focus in on that space. And we just blindly reached out to certain organizations and said, you know, we noticed that you're growing and this is what we do and we feel like we could be of some benefit. So there's some traditional business development as well. So we will receive the position, understand what the client is looking for from a technical standpoint as well as a cultural standpoint, because that's what separates us, that's what separates firms like ours out is, you know, we can find you a number of candidates that have sponsorship sales, but where we make our money and where we build our business is finding you the right cultural match that this person can start on day one and they're going to fit right within your team. And that, you know, that they'll be able to just hit the ground running and that they're going to be able to do the job, but they're also going to be like, gosh, I feel like this person's been here for a long time. So we will go through the process of screening and talking to candidates, sometimes headhunting and recruiting candidates away from their current roles because this may be a better opportunity or this is an opportunity that they may not have ever thought of, but that this may be the, you know, maybe something that it may be interesting for their long-term career. So we go through and we interview multiple times, you know, and go through the process. And then we present a certain slate of candidates, sometimes usually between like 3 to 5 to maybe 7 at max of candidates that we feel very good about. And we write up little profiles about them, you know, just of our interactions and our thoughts about the candidates. And then, you know, and then present them to the client and work with the client as hands-on as they want us to be, of whether it's scheduling interviews all the way to making the offer and negotiating the offer for the client, and then making sure that once the, you know, once the candidate starts, that, you know, we're kind of there through the end of it. So
wow, it's a complex process. I mean, it's not to be understated how intricate it is for you. I'm guessing you must have a huge network of people you pull from when you have openings to fill. You go to those kind of greatest hits almost. Do you have any, two-part question, do you have any tips for people to get stronger at networking? Because obviously some of these people got to know you somehow or you got to know them. So how do people get found and build their brand, their own personal brand? And then secondarily, how does somebody get on your radar? How do they get noticed by somebody like you in the sports recruiting world?
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, our business, you know, it's network is, you know, I mean, is key. And, you know, I think, you know, your partners at Work in Sports did a survey, you know, a few years ago where they asked a number of executives, you know, where do you find your positions or where do you find your people? And still to this day, I think it was like 67%, 68% still said that they go through their network.
Yeah.
So how do you get on the radar? It's all about being relevant. You know, I'm a big believer in being relevant to search firms like mine. You know, obviously, you know, how do you get yourself noticed? How do you get your, well, it's just picking up the phone and saying, you know, this is, you know, my name is Dan Rossetti. This is what I do. You know, I'm currently working at this. I'm thinking about making the next move in my career. I'd love to get on your radar for future searches.
Yeah.
Okay, great. You know, we'll have someone talk with you. We'll add you to our database. And then, but then the follow-up comes in, and I can't stress and how many times I've told candidates this is, please stay in touch with me. It's kind of like circling back to the end of our conversation. Please stay in touch with me, because, and I don't mean this to come across as egotistical, but we talk to a lot of people every day and every week. So it's very easy for you to become forgotten if you don't keep poking the bear a little bit.
Yeah.
So I tell candidates, please keep in touch with me every 4 to 6 to 8 weeks. Just send me a quick email. Hey, Dan. Just wanted to check in with you, see if there was anything that popped up in the discussion, you know, in the spaces of the discussion that we had a month ago. You know, please let me know. I look forward to hearing from you.
Yep.
And then I may respond back, Brian, with just a very simple, you know what, right now we really don't. You know, and you know, I appreciate you checking in. You know, talk to you again soon. Or you never know, right when your email comes in, that I'm like, you know what? Actually, we did just get hired for this.
Yeah.
That may make some sense for you. So it's all about timing, but that doesn't just naturally happen. You have to make it happen.
Yep.
So you have to find reasons to network. But I'm also a big believer in, and I take this from my side of the business, is I like to keep in touch with my clients and our candidates. I mean, you read the trade magazines. You read what's going on in our industry, that you can make yourself stand out when you follow up appropriately by saying, hey, congratulations, XYZ team. I saw you just struck a new partnership, a new title, you know, a new jersey partnership with MasterCard or Coca-Cola or whoever it is.
Yeah.
You know, congratulations. What does that do for your business? If you just did that and took the time to do a little research before reaching out, you would stand out above 100 other networking emails that are going to come in. So
that's
make
great.
Yourself kind of a little bit different when you send that note out. I mean, if someone sent me a note, which I now know I'm going to start getting thousands of them, you know, from the people listening on the podcast,
yeah.
You know, if you just said, hey, Dan, congrats, you know, I noticed you guys, you know, just filled this position at NWSL Media, National Women's Soccer League Media, for head of sponsorship sales. Congratulations. That sounds like a great role. My next move is going to be blah, blah, blah. It's going to stand out a little bit more than someone just going, hey, Dan, hope you're doing well. We talked 2 months ago.
What
is there anything new
me?
That's a fit for me?
Yeah, exactly.
Is there a new fit for me?
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, like, go about it and do the things that, again, make you stand out a little bit.
Yeah, it goes back to what you said at the very beginning of being determined, being resourceful and resilient, and just being thoughtful, too. You know, just really being thoughtful about your every level of communication you have is these touch points that you have with anybody, with yourself, with anybody else out there in the industry. Every time you're talking to somebody is an opportunity to prove yourself and improve your personal brand. So be thoughtful about it. Really think about what you're saying and what you want to get out of the conversation.
Damn. And I can't stress enough to piggyback off of that. Do not ever put down past employers, bosses, or other people in our business when you're talking to people. And, you know, as you go about it, as you think about your brand, to kind of follow up on the brand.
Yes.
Because our industry is so small that you never know when the person you go, this former boss that I had was a complete, you know, jerk, and they did this, and you make excuses of why you're no longer there. You never know when that person may be the best friend of the hiring manager that we're going to be presenting you to.
So
you just, you know, you have to be, I love, you know, what you mentioned of, you know, of identifying what your personal brand is. What do you want your personal brand to be out there in our business? And usually if you take the time to do it, it'll come true and you'll be able to be perceived that way.
So many great nuggets in there for you to digest from Dan. I hope you took good notes, because these are the pieces of information that can make a real difference in your career. Thank you for listening. As always, I love having you guys as a great audience. Thank you for interacting with me, giving me feedback through LinkedIn, through our private Facebook group, through Twitter, all these different avenues you have to connect with me and give me feedback and tell me what you like and tell me what you don't like, or where we should go or what we should discuss. I love hearing from all of you, so please don't be shy. Today is Halloween, so happy Halloween. Be safe out there, and I will talk to you all soon.